almost like that leading up to the legalization of marijuana is like leading up to Y2K, and everybody, you know, bought all the bottled water in the stores and they cleaned out all the shelves. And then midnight came and went, and it was like, oh yeah, life's just kind of continuing on as it did before. And this is probably what we will see after midnight tonight. But, you know, there are certain things that will change. And one of those areas has to do with personal injury law. And we're going to talk about that because Jasmine Dea is on the line. She's a managing lawyer at Jasmine Dea & Co. And they're a personal injury firm that specializes in club assaults, cyberbullying, claims involving minors, negligent landlord issues. And she is back with us. Great to have you back, Jasmine. Thanks for doing this.
Thanks so much for having me. It's always a pleasure, Barb.
So as a personal injury lawyer, I mean, I know employment lawyers have been approached leading up to this. Have you been in talks with anybody or companies, anything along those lines, about the legalization of marijuana?
So far, the conversations I've had have all been very casual, and those conversations have been from employers in particular, asking about what they are supposed to do, especially when the employment situation involves heavy machinery, for example. The other casual conversations I've had are with people that work at schools, teachers at schools, wondering how they are going to address the situation when young people are involved, and if they smell of marijuana, what are you supposed to do about it?
And let's talk about some of those situations, because they're great questions. I mean, it affects employers, it affects teachers. Let's start with teachers. What are they supposed to do if they can smell that one of their students has been smoking marijuana?
So many of the school boards are updating their codes of conduct and disciplinary procedures, and unfortunately, there just hasn't been a lot of guidance on what they're supposed to do. My understanding is that teachers are getting training right now on detecting whether someone has actually used the substance or just smells like the substance. So they're not just being teachers anymore. Now they have to look at, you know, is my student on drugs, which is not something that they used to have to do, but it's coming, and it's coming in a few hours.
You know, I will say, though, I think there is a lot of marijuana use that's happening in high schools anyway. This can't be completely foreign to teachers. But does
Absolutely.
I was just going to say, does it create another challenge because it is legal?
Well, it creates another challenge, yes, because it's legal, and it's not just in schools. So when we look at commercial and social host liability, it's the same thing. You know, people have been using cannabis, marijuana, whatever you want to call it, for years. I think it would be naive to suggest that that wasn't the case. The issue is that the substance is now legal, and what does that mean? How do people address it, and what are the consequences that could be involved?
Okay, so let's give an example of somebody hosting a party, and we all know, you know, if you give your guests too much alcohol and they get into an accident, you could be held responsible. How does it work? Is it the same with marijuana? What if you're not providing it to them?
Okay, so the thing with the law, unfortunately, is that it takes an event to occur sometimes until we have new law created to address it. So in the area of social host liability, there is no law right now on what happens if you overserve cannabis. It will take someone having an unfortunate accident for the law to catch up and deal with it. The assumption by personal injury lawyers that have put their minds to it, such as myself, is that, yes, it's going to be treated like alcohol. So as of October 17th, you can purchase cannabis, but you cannot legally purchase edibles. You can, however, bake your cookies or your brownies at home. So if you are a host at a party and you serve edibles or permit people to smoke marijuana and then they get into an accident or injure, you know, whether it's injuring themselves or injuring someone else or injuring or damaging, I should say, property, that host of that party will likely be liable just like with alcohol.
Now, what if the person at the party is mixing alcohol you are serving and their own marijuana? How do you prove? Do you know what I mean? Like something could happen because they are mixing, but you didn't serve all of it to them.
Yes, that's a huge concern, because when you combine alcohol and cannabis, the level of intoxication soars, and it's really hard for anyone except yourself to monitor that. And that's where we go into commercial host liability. So commercial host, you're at a restaurant or you're at a bar, and the individuals serving you alcohol are SmartServe certified. So they are there to try to protect you, to ensure that you aren't overserved, to ensure that you aren't intoxicated. They have different ways that they look at different tools, such as counting how many drinks you've had at the establishment. But if you have, you know, left the premises, smoked a joint, come back, and you're having drinks, you know, it makes their jobs that much more difficult. So time will tell if they will be held liable or not. I believe that the liability will extend to the commercial host, but again, it will take something happening before the law addresses it.
Jasmine Dea is on the line, and she is a personal injury lawyer, and she's written a really interesting blog about cannabis legalization and avoiding the personal injury potholes. And we were just talking, Jasmine, about a commercial host liability perspective, and serving and not perhaps being able to control if somebody is drinking alcohol, goes outside, shares a joint, smokes a joint, has some edibles, comes back in, and if they get, you know, the effect of both alcohol and marijuana, and is the bar owner, is the restaurant owner liable? And what about SmartServe? Will this change the way that people have to go through the process to get a SmartServe certification?
I haven't seen any discussion about SmartServe certification changing just yet, but it's definitely a discussion that needs to be had, like so many areas, that I think after tomorrow we're going to see changes being implemented, because it's going to take occurrences happening, different events occurring, and then people will need to address it by implementing change.
And so, as you say, and this is a really interesting take on it, we will see the changes once the bad stuff starts to happen.
Unfortunately, I don't see how we can anticipate everything that may occur. And I think that so much time is being spent right now properly on, well, how do we regulate this? How do we deal with impairment, with drivers, things of that nature, that some of these other issues, in particular in the personal injury realm, are sort of taking a back seat and waiting for things to happen and then will be addressed thereafter. But I think the key message to people out there listening is that while it is becoming legal, whether you agree or disagree with that, it's not always safe in every circumstance.
We've got a few minutes left. If you have any personal injury law questions, Jasmine Dea, lawyer, is on the line. Someone wrote in a text question, Jasmine. It's from Lisa. She says, it's a question that's been burning her mind as far as smoking and driving. She says, I know there's a limit for alcohol before a person is considered intoxicated. Marijuana affects everybody differently. Is there some way that the police are able to determine the level of intoxication due to marijuana like they can with alcohol, or is it either you smoked or you didn't, and that's it?
Such a good question. Such a good question, because depending on who you talk to, they're going to give you a different answer. Mm. So if you look at the federal government is saying, yes, we have this test, we have a way to measure. But then you look at Doug Ford, who just said the police aren't equipped to reliably screen for drug-impaired driving. So who do you believe? And I was actually talking to some lawyers today about this, and we all agreed that it's likely that people's charter rights are going to be infringed upon while we figure out the law, meaning that there may be tests administered initially to determine if people are impaired while driving, which may be an infringement of their rights.
Interesting. Will employers need to make changes to their policy? Now, I know we were talking about things happening and then changes being made, but I think leading up to this, a number of employers probably would have made changes to their policy, similar to the restrictions they would have concerning alcohol.
I've heard of some employers that have required their employees to sign off on a document acknowledging the policy. And if the employees are not signing off on the policy, then they are told they can no longer work there.
Oh.
So it is happening by some employers, but, you know, I doubt all. And it also depends on the type of business that is being run. The task force on cannabis legalization and regulation did not include an occupational health and safety perspective. So unfortunately, it's left to employers to address. And I think, as I said earlier, employers that have employees using heavy machinery absolutely need to implement a policy to avoid any potential liability.
Personal injury lawyer Jasmine Dea is on the line, and Alex is calling. Hey, Alex, go ahead with your question.
Well, my question was regarding the test. They're going to do a mouth swab test for marijuana for driving. It's not as conclusive as alcohol when they do a breathalyzer for alcohol. I've read reports it's about 75% conclusive, and it lasts about a day. So if I smoke, let's say, now, the test will be conclusive till tomorrow. It'll only be high for, let's say, 2 hours, 3 hours. So what will happen when the courts decide that these tests are not, they're not legal, they're not passing the code of what law should be, and, you know, who's high and who isn't?
So that's one of the main issues. Like, these tests right now, what most people are saying is they're not reliable. And if the tests are not reliable, then there can't be a conviction from a criminal perspective. So while you may initially be charged, which is obviously problematic to have a criminal charge pending, you likely won't have a conviction. But again, you know, time will tell whether those tests are reliable or not.
Well, I know the police, like federally, there's only one mouth swab test that's actually approved. But that is approved by the police. So the question is, well, by the government. But the question is, what happens when it's decided after the fact that it's already approved that these tests aren't conclusive?
She just said that you wouldn't be convicted. You might be charged.
No, I'm not saying, like, I'm just saying, will the courts deny the fact that there is, like, no one can tell someone is high or not?
Oh, you're saying, like, how will they eventually ever get it right?
Yeah, because it doesn't make sense. Like, let's say someone gets stopped and the test, let's say, smoked a week ago. And a test shows on a mouth swab that, you know, they still have THC on their, you know, on their tongue. So what happens in that sense when, because you can't prove someone is or isn't high. You can't do a roadside test to see if someone's high.
Well, right now you can't, but I think they're working on, you know, trying to develop something more reliable than what we have. So hopefully sometime soon we have a reliable test.
And in terms of police stopping people, their most effective test still is the field sobriety test, which has nothing to do with swabs or anything along those lines. But this, again, will be an evolving thing in terms of how will people ever get convicted and how will it ever be proven that they are under the influence of marijuana.
Absolutely. And anyone who has a criminal charge pending is under a lot of stress and strain in the interim and has to incur a lot of legal fees while waiting to see the outcome. So it would be best if people can figure this out and we get a reliable test that can tell people one way or the other where they stand.
All right. Jasmine Dea, great stuff as always. Thank you very much for this.
Thank you so much.
Okay, we'll talk to you soon. That's Jasmine Dea, managing lawyer at Jasmine Dea and Company.